All right, thanks so much for tuning in to the Josh Lafazan Show. I am your host, Josh Lafazan. Happy Wednesday. We have a great show today. We're breaking down inflation's impact on President Trump's election, a new lawsuit over collegiate transgender athletes, and how a New Jersey town is banning the American flag from its meetings. Make sure to hit like and subscribe for new episodes every day, and today's show starts right now. Again, welcome to the Josh Lafazan Show. This episode is sponsored by the Bell Law Group, personal injury and employment law attorneys. Big cases require big representation. Call 516-280-3008 for a free consultation today. And let's get right into it with today's top political stories. And our first story is we're looking at how inflation brought President Trump back into the White House. Now, President-elect Donald Trump rode a wave of voter discontent over a litany of issues Americans had with the Democratic Party. We know that Biden's approvals were at record lows. We know that Democrats were viewed as too extreme on some social issues, and Kamala failed to move the needle in all seven of the swing states. But exit polls have confirmed that the number one issue on voters' minds as they headed to the ballot booth in November was inflation. Pew Research confirms that the economy was the top issue for 81% of voters, including 68% of Harris voters and 93% of Trump voters. And there is a learning lesson for Democrats here, because as consistent as their messaging was over the past couple of months that inflation was down, voters didn't buy it. Because voters' lived experience in their own daily lives will always trump any data or any set of statistics they're presented with. And therein lies the problem. Because the way the federal government counts inflation is not tangible to the individual voter, but the measurement of living costs certainly is. And you see, this is an important distinction, because the Federal Reserve, their method that is preferred of measuring inflation is namely year-over-year inflation. And if you look at the chart on screen, the Fed's measured inflation for October 2024 is 2.3%, which is significantly down from a high of 7.22% in June of 2022. And yes, Joe Biden and Democrats in Washington deserve credit for bringing this number down and navigating inflationary pressures through a global pandemic, supply chain issues, and of course, the war in Ukraine. But when voters were presented with this number as proof that Biden and thus Kamala Harris were the better stewards of the economy and should be rewarded for lowering inflation, voters balked and they chose Trump instead. Because a far more tangible measurement of inflation for individual voters is measuring living costs through the Consumer Price Index, or what's known as CPI. Now, Apollo Academy, which is an online learning platform sponsored by the financial firm Apollo Global Management, absolutely nails this distinction. And as you can see in their chart on screen, the Consumer Price Index is 22% higher than in January 2020. This means that the prices of all goods and services that consumers spend money on are up, on average, by 22%. And that 22% is far more tangible to an individual voter than the Fed saying that inflation is down to 2.3% in its year-over-year analysis. And as Apollo rightly argues, again, the bottom line is that the Fed's preferred measure of inflation, which is namely year-over-year inflation, may be back to near 2%, but the living costs of households are still dramatically higher than 4 years ago. Now, the significance here is the stark reality that Americans across the country are hurting economically. And those Democrats on MSNBC and in Washington who condescendingly remind us that the economy is doing great, which on the whole it is, but they completely ignore that so many voters feel left behind in that great economy. Now, President Trump tapped into the anger of those voters and won in 2024. And whichever party can speak to these voters and provide a concrete plan for reducing costs for them will win in the 2026 midterms and beyond. It's why I support some very common sense measures to bring costs down. We should be expanding energy production, both to bring down the costs of energy for families, but also to create thousands of new jobs in alternative energy like wind and solar. We should be building far more housing units, in which the influx of supply will relieve pressure on rents, which are quite simply unaffordable. We should be investing in free community college so that millions of Americans can go to college without taking on massive debt, while also allowing community colleges to double as trade schools so workers can learn a trade and join a union. We should be fast-tracking infrastructure projects. If we built the Empire State Building in 1 year, we can quickly rebuild the roads, bridges, and tunnels, which are in terrible disrepair. We should pass new rules to ensure that corporations pay their fair share in taxes while working to repatriate the billions of dollars corporations are holding overseas and bring it back and invest it here. And finally, we should raise the minimum wage, so that no American working 40 hours a week ever lives in poverty. The phrase, the rent is too damn high, is one of the most famous slogans in politics. I'm hoping our politicians will adopt the slogan, the costs are too damn high, and help the millions of voters who so desperately need relief. If the American economy is doing great, we can't wait for every American to do great. And so Washington must move expeditiously to tackle this issue, bring costs down for families once and for all. This brings us to our second top story, which is that Boise State Volleyball is the newest group to sue over transgender athlete policies. Now, Boise State Women's Volleyball made national headlines this week. As CNN reports, they officially withdrew from its Mountain West Conference Championship tournament match against San Jose State University amid an ongoing gender controversy surrounding a San Jose State player. But Boise State's actions didn't stop on the volleyball court. According to the Idaho Capital Sun, two Boise State players signed onto a lawsuit that was filed last week against San Jose State University, which, according to previous court filings, has a transgender athlete on its women's volleyball roster. The lawsuit also targets the Mountain West Conference, saying the athletic conference hastily and quietly adopted a transgender athletics policy the same day Boise State announced it would not play a match against San Jose State. The Sun further reports that this policy included language that any team that refuses to play against an opponent with a transgender athlete, quote, shall be deemed to have forfeited the contest. And thus, the lawsuit labels the conference's policy and its timing as an attempt to, and again I quote, penalize the Boise State University women's volleyball team members from speaking out, and is asking the federal judge to throw out the policy. Now, obviously, this case will make its way through the court system, but the lawsuit once again reignites the debate over whether transgender athletes should be permitted to participate in women's sports. And despite the overwhelming majority of Americans at 85% believing that women's sports should be exclusively for biological women, the 15% who disagree have been quite effective at ensuring minority rule. Now, I'm a Democrat, and I've served as a Democratic lawmaker representing a Republican district for 12 years. But the fact that I'm in the minority of the outspoken Democrats on what to me is such a clear answer is not only alarming, but continues to speak to why Democrats are viewed as too extreme by the majority of voters. Because of course sports should be for biological girls only. And the question I continue to ask is this: why do the few trump the rights of the overwhelming majority of girls? Why do the 85% of Americans who agree have to live under the rule of the 15%? And this is yet another example of what I call the tyranny of the minority. And yes, my fellow Democrats are wrong on this issue. And poll after poll showed this election cycle that voters are turned off by our party in large part due to our stances on culture issues, which voters believe are too extreme. This is an issue that defies basic logic, that the inherent physical advantage of biological boys competing in girls' sports endangers the safety, welfare, and fairness of biological girl athletes. And despite efforts by activists and liberal influencers to paint the picture to the contrary, this is not about the rights of the minority, as the founders in the Constitution took great concern over protecting, because this is not a civil rights issue, it's an athletics issue. We are not talking about school integration and depriving students the right to a good education. Education is a fundamental right enshrined in law, where the will of the majority to keep schools segregated from the minority was rightly overturned. We are not talking about discriminatory housing policies, denying citizens the right to live in the community they choose. The choice to live where one chooses is enshrined in fair housing law, and realtors who fail to uphold these standards can lose their licenses and can even go to jail. We are simply talking about sports, again, which is not a constitutional right, but an elective that students can opt into. And the last I checked, playing sports in school was a privilege, not a right, where we already have rules which bar certain people from playing sports. If students can't pass a physical, or they can't make GPA requirements, or if they use drugs or get suspended, or a million other disqualifiers, they can't play. So in what world does it make sense for schools not to enforce biological sex, which is the most important distinguisher, as a rule for qualifying as well? The solution here is very simple. In keeping with freedom of assembly and personal liberty protections in the Constitution, private leagues should have the freedom to enact any rules that they choose. But in public schools, where taxpayer dollars support school sports and where the welfare of the vast majority of students should take precedence, the vast majority should rule, and girls' sports should be for biological girls. And this entire debate is indicative of how the far left has hijacked the Democratic Party from the moderates in the middle, which has contributed to our defeats electorally at the local, state, and federal levels. For the past decade, the far left has militantly enforced their rules about the sacrifices the majority must make for the comfort of the minority, to always use the right pronouns, to never accidentally misgender, to get rid of gendered language and replace words like Latino with Latinx and mother with birthing person, to harass innocent citizens at restaurants on the street, and publicly shame anyone for having the audacity to publicly support Donald Trump as their nominee. But in what alternate universe must we accept this insane type of society, where an infinitesimal group enforces rules for the majority of the nation through intimidation and through fear? And this is why I continue to say on this show that moderate Democrats must come out from hiding and reclaim the majority of our party and extricate ourselves from the tyranny of the fringe. The only arguments that are being made against my position and the position of 85% of Americans who agree here are not ones from factual basis, but rather from moral ones. If you agree with my position, you can be labeled transphobic, or not compassionate, or simply be accused of being brainwashed by Republican talking points. And it's this type of sanctimonious, holier-than-thou, I'm morally superior to you nonsense that turns people off from Democrats in the first place. So I applaud these courageous women from Boise State who used their First Amendment rights to say they disagreed with the Mountain West's policy and withdrew from the tournament. And I applaud the two Boise State players who are rightly availing themselves of the legal system to fight what they see as injustice. The shame here is that the adults, and I say adults in quotes, running the NCAA and the Mountain West Conference don't display the same level of courage and do the right thing. Playing sports is not a fundamental right, it is a privilege. And I hope sanity will prevail in this country so we can protect female athletes in girls' sports everywhere. Our last story is that an American town has actually moved to ban the American flag at its meetings. Again, so in the strangest news of the week, the New Jersey town of Edison has banned the American flag from its municipal meetings. As reported by My Central Jersey, the American flag, the U.S. Constitution, and other, quote, props are no longer allowed to be used during the public portion of township council meetings under a new ordinance that also limits the time that residents have to address the governing body. The report continues that in addition to banning the use of props, the new rules limit comments from individuals to 4 minutes, eliminating rebuttal comments, and establishing rules for decorum. Now, while this show is mocking the Edison Town Council, we applaud the actual residents in Edison who are fighting back against something that seems every bit as preposterous as it is. As one resident expressed, "To consider the American flag and the Constitution a prop when someone raises it is an insult to what the flag is, what the flag stands for, and what the country is. For you to consider the use of the American flag as a prop is disgusting." When another resident spoke during the public comment of the meeting, he held up a copy of the U.S. Constitution in reinforcing his point that the document guarantees the freedom of petition in its First Amendment. Yet he was told by Council President Patel that he was using the U.S. Constitution as a prop and that he would face being removed by police. Now, if you're sitting there cringing at the sheer lunacy of any sentient human being ever casting a single vote for Edison Council President Patel, you're not alone. In what alternate universe is he living? When anyone is elected to public office in the United States, they must, before assuming that office, sign the oath of office card and swear to uphold the very rules in the Constitution that he is banning from these meetings. I take great pains to mainly attack people on the substance of their issues, but Council President Patel is quite frankly an idiot, someone who is moronic beyond repair and doesn't belong in student council, let alone elected office. And listen, In 2012, I became the youngest elected official in New York State, and I served in elected office in government as a lawmaker for 12 years. The things I've had said to me at public hearings were truly astounding, running the gamut from insane to just downright gross. The names I've been called, the accusations hurled at me, so much of it I felt was objectionable and wrong. And yes, people who disagreed with me often brought props, not of the Constitution and not an American flag, but actual props of me to mock and ridicule me, including a life-size cutout of my body, memes of me, creative flyers, and more. And obviously, I'm a human being and didn't appreciate this treatment, but never once did I move to enact rules to prohibit these people from bringing their props or from speaking out against me, because that is the most fundamental part of free speech. And bringing props of me in is a very different stratosphere than bringing in the American flag or the US Constitution with you to make a point. Being a proponent of free speech means defending someone's right to speak, even when you may find that speech to be reprehensible. So I find myself absolutely outraged at the imbeciles in Edison, New Jersey, who parade around and call themselves lawmakers when all they're doing is violating the very spirit of the law they swore to uphold. And I hope the good people of Edison prevail in not only removing this ordinance, but removing the downed council members on Election Day as well. That's our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure to like and subscribe for new episodes every day. I'm Josh Lafazan. Thank you for watching The Josh Lafazan Show. Have a great rest of the day. We'll see you tomorrow.